With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Daily Premier League news and views. This is Football Social Daily.
The Premier League and European club competitions may be over, but that doesn't mean football has come to a stop. We're just 9 days away from the start of Euro 2020, albeit a year late, and we now know the 26-man squad that have been trusted to bring football home when the tournament kicks off next Friday. We'll be discussing Gareth Southgate's decisions on who to take and who to axe, as well as the never-ending football calendar which continues tonight as England take on Austria in Middlesbrough. As well as all that, we'll be trying to get our heads around the managerial merry-go-round that's happening across Europe right now, with Carlo Ancelotti ditching Everton for Real Madrid yesterday. Although somehow we doubt Zinedine Zidane is up for the swap with Ancelotti and heading to England to manage Alex Iwobi at Finch Farm. To go through all that with me, Marley Anderson, it's Niall McCorn and Ian Brannan. How are you guys on this fine sunny Wednesday morning in England, Niall? Are you as sunburnt as I am?
I was over the weekend, to be fair. I actually managed to do something that not a lot of people have been able to do for a long time. I went on a stag do at the weekend, Marley. Can you believe
did
it?
Did you?
I did, yeah. But it wasn't like abroad. We were supposed to go to Slovakia last year. Bratislava, meant to be a really nice country, really nice city. I was really looking forward to it. And obviously, coronavirus reared its ugly head and that got cancelled. And then it got rearranged last summer for Bournemouth. And then the restrictions came in again. So that got cancelled. So now the organiser of the stag do decided that he was just going to do like a camp out in a field near a pub, and it was absolutely amazing. But obviously I wasn't planning on sitting outside in the sun in 25 degree heat for 3 days and ended up getting burnt to a crisp. So I am a little bit red, to be fair, but I think I'm just about getting over it.
Well, tell you what, Bournemouth to Bratislava to Bournemouth and then to a field is quite the journey, to be honest. I went on a stag do in Slovakia, in Bratislava, about 5 years ago. It was the first one I'd ever been on. And the best thing about it, there was this there was a club for a certain type of gentleman, and its name was Boobies. It was brilliant. And it did what it said on the tin. But anyway, swiftly moving on from that. Ian, how are you? Are you burnt in this horrible, amazing sun that we've got right now?
Yeah, I mean, my location being where I am on the east coast in Sunderland, we've been sitting in sea fret for about 3 days, and seeing all these pictures of people out having barbecues, chilling out on their sun lounges, sweating away, and literally it's like 10 degrees outside and foggy. But today the sun has arrived. However, it's weird because I'm right on the cusp of it, so literally a mile down the road, and you do have the sunny weather, and I was out there for about an hour on bank holiday Monday, and but my face yesterday was like a beetroot, so I've been sat in the dark since then to try and balance it out. But that's just the risks, isn't it? You know, you live in the northeast and the sun comes out and you know what it's like. It's unbelievable.
Did you have a face like Big Sam?
Not quite that red. Not like if I drunk a bit more red wine perhaps, but not far away.
Honestly, I think I was in the pub for a couple of hours on Saturday, and I came in And I decided to wear a vest, and now I'm still wearing the vest, except the vest is just my white skin and my bright red shoulders. So it's the clearest thing ever. I look like a custom football kit on Pro Evo when the arms are red and the body's white. But anyway, let's talk about football. Shows people are listening and thinking, what the hell are these idiots talking about? It's a Wednesday. It always goes a bit awry on a Wednesday, as Ian will know. So yeah, let's swing this back to what's going on in the football world. And the main thing is yesterday's England squad announcement. And it was all talk about who were going to be the unfortunate seven. As it turned out, it ended up being Aaron Ramsdale, Ben Godfrey, Ben White, bad day if you're a Ben, I suppose, James Ward-Prowse, Mason Greenwood, Ollie Watkins, and is that it? Have I missed someone? Was it... Oh, Lingard, Jesse Lingard as well. Yeah, so firstly, Niall, are we in agreement that they're the right seven to be cut? Has he got the balance right? Because he has took all four right-backs. So what are your thoughts on the seven that got cut?
Yeah, that's the big debate, isn't it, about the right backs? And you know, I think it's really interesting because Gareth Southgate actually said yesterday, he said, "I've picked the 26 best footballers in the country." So actually, it's not he's picked the right amount of each position. He's just, in his mind, picked the 26 best footballers in England at the moment, which I thought was also interesting because I think Jesse Lingard will probably be in that category in terms of form. And we always heard Gareth Southgate around the World Cup saying that he would only pick players on form. I mean, I think it's probably not a surprise that some of the players that have been cut, Ramsdale, I was stunned that he even got called up anyway. I was really surprised. Obviously, he's been dropped. The defenders that came in, Ben White, Ben Godfrey, it was kind of their maiden call-ups, I suppose, or the first time they've kind of been on the periphery of the England squad. So no real shocks there. The one that I'm seeing a lot of debate around is James Ward-Prowse and the fact that he's been dropped from the squad. Now, obviously, he's an exceptional set-piece taker and probably one of the best, if not the best, in the Premier League in terms of statistics for taking set pieces. However,
I feel like there's some anti-Southampton coming here.
I was going to say this is quite positive for a Portsmouth
fan. You've got to hold your hands up and say the lad knows how to take a free kick, right? And
go on, bring it on.
You know, in a major tournament, you do need someone who can take set pieces. But I think England do have enough set piece takers to nullify that argument of him going. I just don't think he offers enough elsewhere. And you're looking at a team in Leeds United who have got Calvin Phillips, who have exceeded expectations this season. Southampton have been poor on the whole this season. And it just goes to show that actually, if you end the season poorly, you might not get in. Danny Ings was a shoo-in before Christmas, and now he's nowhere to be seen. He's not even in the squad. He didn't even make the 30-man squad. So, you know, if you're talking about players that are being cut out on form, maybe that's a fair assessment. I don't like the comparisons of James Ward-Prowse and Steven Gerrard. I mean, they're just ridiculous. I'm seeing on social media.
Have you seen them?
I've seen a few of them, sort of disgruntled fans
You need to stay off the James Ward-Prowse fan page.
You can't. I think they're being retweeted by some humoured Portsmouth fans, actually, to be fair. But I think on the whole, the seven players that have been cut, I don't think there's too many complaints. But again, Marley, like we discussed before and on previous podcasts, it's more about this right-back debate, which seems to be where the majority of the debate is coming from. In terms of who's been cut out of the side, I don't think there's any real shocks there. Probably Lingard. Although, I think Southgate is keeping them in and amongst it until the pre-tournament friendlies are over, which some are concerned about. Not concerned about, but some are confused by, because, you know, it says a lot about those players that they still want to stick around and muck in and help out playing for their country in a pre-tournament friendly when they're not even going to be going to the tournament rather than, you know, sliding off on their holidays early. So, yeah, as for the seven, I'm not disappointed that anyone's been cut out of that group, let's just say.
Yeah, well, I think it might be different if the world was open as normal. You know what I mean? If I was like, do you want to stick around and go to Middlesbrough, or do you want to just jet off to, you know, the south of France or something? I'd be like, yeah, see you later. But everyone's sticking around.
Palmos all round.
Yeah. Oh, imagine. There's no better way to finish your season than a big fat Palmo and putting on a stone after you've
met it. That's it. Red Car Beach, what more do you want?
Yeah, the tropics of Middlesbrough. Ian, are you in agreement with Niall? Do you think that the seven pretty much picked themselves to be cut?
Yeah, we talked about this last week when they'd announced the 30-odd players that were in the original extended squad, and I think we probably picked most of the ones there, you know, the newcomers missing out. And the only question marks really are, you know, this is his squad, but it is still flexible right until the tournament starts because of the COVID flexibility. So if anything happens there, there is still the possibility for some of these guys that have missed out currently to be recalled at the last minute. I don't think the final cutoff is until just before the tournament begins. So that's probably why a few of them are still hanging around just in case. There are fitness doubts clearly over Henderson, and Grealish is not match fit at the moment. He's certainly a doubt for the match tonight. And Jadon Sancho also a doubt because of fitness concerns. So there are three players there who, you know, come the actual tournament. And Harry Maguire, obviously, is definitely out. So there's four players there who might not be 100% come the start of the tournament. We don't exactly know yet. And that could be an issue that, that needs looking at, and maybe there might be a last-minute tweak. We don't know. Clearly, Gareth Southgate is hopeful that these players are going to make it, that they have a chance, because otherwise they would surely be dropped now if they weren't going to make the tournament. And yeah, that would be my only question, really, rather than the ones that have been left out. It's the ones that are in that are maybe not 100% fit.
So, I agree. I totally agree with that, Ian. And I was thinking about this last night. I thought I could count five or six players that are not fully fit. I mean, Marcus Rashford, you could add to that list. There's a few queries around Dominic Calvert-Lewin because obviously he was injured for the fair majority of the second part of the season, or at least the last couple of months. And Grealish, as you say, apart from the final two games of the season, he missed the 12 games before that. So Mason Greenwood as well, he's already been sent home. Mm-hmm. Manchester United have said that they don't want him to go because he's got a niggling injury that he needs to recover from. So actually, I think it's a really good point that there are probably, of the 26 players that have been chosen by Gareth Southgate, a fair chunk of them are either carrying knocks visibly, like Harry Maguire, or aren't 100% match fit, which may raise a few concerns.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Jordan Henderson as well hasn't played for about 6 months and he's still going. I think it's going to take him three or four games to get back to fitness. But, you know, it's a weird balance that they've got to strike. But talking about balance, and I think Ian mentioned it there, the four right-backs, I mean, I don't know whether you two agree, but it seems to me like he's tried to just not annoy anyone by taking all four of them. And he's thought, I can't drop Trent because there'll be too much outcry and it's too easy a thing to point out when England ultimately go out. He's thought, oh, Trippier's won the league and James has won the Champions League and Walker's won the Premier League. It's an embarrassment of riches, to be honest. But I don't know, Niall, do you think he should have just took two or possibly three, if as hard as the decision might have been?
As England supporters, we always debate about our strongest areas and never our weakest areas. We're always talking about four right-backs. Oh, that's too many. Someone needs to be axed. Rather than we're looking a bit light at centre-back. And I'm sure we'll come on to it. Maybe we don't have enough strikers in the squad. You know, so I just thought that was an interesting sort of narrative in terms of the way we discuss the England squad as supporters.
Well, are we not talking about we've got too many right-backs, therefore we should have more centre-backs?
Yeah.
No, we're not saying Trippier shouldn't go, for example, because Ben Godfrey should go as the fourth centre-back,
I think,
or something like that.
On that, I like all of them. And, you know, we ranked them, didn't we, on the Sports Social Twitter page, myself, you and Jim. We all ranked our sort of four right-backs in order. And I put James at the bottom of the list. And that doesn't mean he's a terrible player. It's kind of a weird thing where you see someone think, oh, he's fourth best. That doesn't mean he's a shocking player. He's fourth best and he could still do a very, very good job on his day. And I think that actually, if I was thinking about this in a little bit more detail, the two players that Southgate would have been better off dropping are Trent Alexander-Arnold and Kyle Walker, for the simple reason of he's dropped them before. He didn't include Trent in his most recent squad before this back in March for those internationals. So therefore, he kind of had a reason to leave Trent out again. Despite his end of season form, he had a reason to leave him out because he didn't make the last squad. And therefore, you've got this kind of thread there, which is, oh, Southgate doesn't fancy him. And much like a couple of years ago, the same thing happened to Kyle Walker. he was being left out by Gareth Southgate on a regular basis. I think there was a period of 18 months where Kyle Walker wasn't called up for an England squad. So actually, if you're talking about precedent, Southgate has previous with those two players and possibly could have left them out and therefore might have been able to get away with it as an excuse. But I do think that you've got a point there. I do think that, you know, if you leave any of those players out, you're going to get pelters, and maybe he has taken the easy option, because it's hard to see, apart from Alexander-Arnold, who could play in midfield, it's hard to see where else those other players go, really. Because obviously on the left side, you've got Chilwell and Shaw. And I guess Reece James could do a job on the other side as well. But apart from that, I mean, you play in however many games with four right backs. Exactly the question that you've just asked. How do they all fit in? But that's the reason he's the manager of England and we're here talking about it. He must have a plan, because if he doesn't, he's gonna get unstuck. And if England don't do well, everyone will point at that. He took four right back, you know, when we ended up, you know, not scoring enough goals or whatever, because Harry Kane gets a knock and Calvert-Lewin isn't scoring or whatever. You know, you can just foresee it, can't you? You can visualise it. Something happens and everyone points the finger at that and says, well, he should never have taken four right-backs. So I hope he's got a plan, because he's going to need it if things go belly up.
Yeah, well, thinking about it, I think the only reason you take four is if you're going to play two in the same team. And that would suggest to me, as well as the lack of centre-backs, you know, only three specialised centre-backs in the squad, I think he's going for four with Mings as well. I think he's going for a back three again with Kyle Walker playing right centre back, and I don't know. Yeah. I was looking into this yesterday, and I hate this narrative that Kyle Walker can play centre back because he's played there before for England. Like, I looked at his stats last night. He's played there 19 times in his entire career. His career spans nearly 600 games. And he's played there 19 times. That's less than half a season at right back, at centre back. And I know it's like right sided centre back. It's kind of a hybrid between centre back and right back, and you can use his pace and whatever. But he's only ever played there 5 times for Man City, or any club, sorry. And he's played there 13 times, I think it is, or 14 for England. I think most of that was, I think he played 8 of those in the build up to the World Cup. I think in three warm up games. And then the 5 or 6 tournament games we had. And then there was this thing of, oh, well, Kyle Walker can play centre-back. And it's like, he was poor in that World Cup at centre-back. He didn't look like he knew what he was doing. And that's nothing against him. He was learning the position in the biggest tournament in the world. But
I think that's why he's brought Cody as well, Marley, because Cody pretty much exclusively plays in a back three for Wolves. And Wolves have been rubbish this season.
That's what I mean.
They've been shocking. But the only reason Cody is going is because he can play in a back three and he knows that system. He's drilled in that system week in, week out. Obviously, Nuno Santos moving on now. But he's played in that system for Wolves for the last 5 or 6 seasons or whatever it is. So he's kind of well drilled in it. So that's the only reason I could think of him bringing Connor Cody. And I think you're right. I think there is a case for the back three system, because am I right in thinking they played it in the World Cup and obviously that worked pretty well? So
yeah,
maybe he's just sticking to what he knows.
They played it in the World Cup and then they've never played it since, really. They've gone to a back four and tried to get the best out the front end of the pitch, which is, in, you know, you look at the attacking options we've got and Jesus Christ, that's an embarrassment of riches. But what do you think, Ian? Do you think it's going to be a back three and we're going to try and win every game from right back? or are we going to just chuck it in towards Kane and see what happens?
Yeah, I think somewhere between the two, to be honest. But looking at what Gareth Southgate said, because he's been asked obviously this question, do you realise you've got loads of right backs in your team? And he does realise. He's thinking of Alexander-Arnold as a bit more of a versatile player, and he doesn't want to pigeonhole him as a right-back. I think he sees him maybe being used further forward, maybe more like a defensive midfielder, depending on the situation. And just a player that you can use anywhere, really, and has been proved to be fairly handy sometimes with set pieces and things like that as well. And he's pointed out that actually a number of the players, James, Walker and Trippier, have also played in different positions in the past, and I think he's trying to get the best bang for his buck, I think is the best way of putting it, in that he wants players that might be able to play in different positions, play different systems, rather than have somebody who's a pigeonhole classic right back and can't do anything else. He wants to have that versatility throughout the team, and in that way sort of feel that he's taking more players than he actually is. I think that's the justification for it. We'll maybe get an idea of the formation tonight when they play against Austria in Middlesbrough, but it won't obviously be the team that's going to start, because many of them are going to be sitting it out this evening. It's going to be a bit of a second string, I think, for England this evening. So not too much is going to be given away tonight, but I think we might get an idea of the system, because surely the system is something that goes through the squad, if you know what I mean, regardless of whether you're a starter or not, the actual system is surely the thing that they're going to be working on. So we might get an idea tonight.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens tonight, and we'll see what happens on June the 13th when England play their first game. It's a week on Sunday against Croatia. So the team that ended England's World Cup chances 3 years ago now, wasn't it, in the semi-finals. We'll see if there's any revenge to be had when the tournament kicks off on the 11th, which is next Friday, I think it is. We'll see. We'll see what happens, but we'll see if England can get the four right backs clicking perfectly, and maybe Southgate's going to come up with this system where, you know, full backs just become the most expensive players in the world, because the more you play, the more you have, the more success you'll have. But we'll have to wait and see until Euro 20.
Sorry, I was going to say, the other thing that is interesting, there's clearly a couple of players in there who don't play in the Premier League that we don't see very often, like Trippier and Sancho and so on, who we're not really fully aware of how they're going to adapt into that team, unless you've been watching them in those leagues. But obviously Trippier's had a good season with Atletico, and it'd be interesting to see how he slots in, because I think we become used to watching Match of the Day and knowing what we know of the top four and that being it, and obviously there is a world out there, so it's going to be interesting to see how they all gel together.
Tell you what, all I would say on that is there's a hell of a difference between being managed by Diego Simeone for 38 games and then coming to a tournament managed by Gareth Southgate. But we'll see what happens when the tournament kicks off. But we'll wrap it up there for part one of the Football Social Daily podcast. We'll be back talking managerial sackings and merry-go-rounds in part two. Join us shortly. Welcome back to Football Social Daily. It's me, your host, Marley Anderson, on this Wednesday morning in sunny England. Hope it's sunny where you are. We're all sunburnt and looking for the sun in Ian's case. We're gonna move on to this weird situation at the minute, where every manager seems to be looking for a job or trying to leave around Europe right now. Carlo Ancelotti was the latest. We only heard this sort of yesterday morning in terms of the press talking about Carlo Ancelotti could be going back to Real Madrid. And by, I think it was about 7 o'clock, Carlo Ancelotti himself was tweeting "Hala Madrid" on his Twitter account, which is proof that it's all done and dusted. And Ancelotti has upped sticks and left Birkenhead to go to the Bernabeu. He's back at Real Madrid. So, firstly, I know Everton fans are annoyed about this, Niall, but can you really blame Carlo Ancelotti at 61 years old for going back and saying, you know, sorry about the project, but Real Madrid have came calling?
Yeah, I said this on my Twitter yesterday. I said Everton to Real Madrid should never really be a surprise, but for some reason in this case it is a bit. I'm not sure whether it's because it did feel like Carlo Ancelotti was like one of the key pieces in a puzzle of a project that they're trying to build over there at Everton. And now, that huge puzzle piece has been pulled out and there's a big hole there that they need to fill, and they need to find the right shape piece to replace him with. It felt like this season, Everton, if they had finished in Europe, they would have had a better chance of keeping him. He signed a 4.5-year contract in December 2019 and he's gone. So, I mean, it just goes to show the pulling power of Real Madrid. He's managed Real Madrid before. He won a Champions League with them in 2014. So I think certainly he's fondly thought of there, even though they're kind of similar to Chelsea, aren't they, Real Madrid, in that if you don't do well for half a season, you're out the door. So, yeah, I mean, going back to Real Madrid, it's no real shock, but at the same time it is. And it's never nice as a supporter of a football club to feel that your club's being used as a stepping stone to bigger things, particularly when Everton are on the periphery. They're on the cusp of being one of these sort of big six clubs. They want to try and turn the big six into a big eight, of which they would be one of them. And it's never nice to feel used. Do you know what I mean? in that way. And I'm sure that Everton fans feel similar about that. I thought that Everton should have had a contingency plan for this. And I hope they probably do, because there's always a chance when you attract a manager of the caliber of Carlo Ancelotti, who's won, you know, 15 major trophies in multiple top clubs around Europe, Chelsea, AC Milan, Real Madrid, etc. The fact he pitched up at Everton, there were a few eyebrows raised, and I would be hoping that Everton and the hierarchy there had a contingency plan in place, because they must have known, unless they were, you know, kidding themselves with, you know, delusions of grandeur, that a manager of that caliber with that CV would surely be poached when one of the big, big clubs in Europe had a vacancy coming up. So I hope that they do have a plan. And obviously this opens up questions about who the replacement should be, but we'll come on to that in a sec, I'm sure. But the best thing I saw, and Ian would like this because this is a good old stat, the last four Premier League managers to finish 10th in the top flight, three of them have gone on to manage Real Madrid or Barcelona. And the only one that hasn't, is Sean Dyche. So maybe he's next on the list to go over to the La Liga. But yeah, I'm surprised, but at the same time, I probably shouldn't be, because he's a top quality manager and Real Madrid are one of the biggest clubs on planet Earth. So disappointing for Everton, but it's about finding someone who can fit that project now and isn't going to have their head turned at something slightly more attractive.
Ian, do you think, you know, I don't know whether you've seen this as well, but I've seen a lot of Everton fans going, meh, well, he only finished 10th. And kind of saying, oh, well, we're not that bothered as long as we get someone in that's right and can take the club on. Do you think, for me, I just don't think Everton fans have realised how good he was, even though I don't think you can do the job Everton are trying to do in one season. So I don't know whether you agree, but do you think that it's something that they just needed to give more time?
Yeah, I think time is a, you know, a key thing in any job. You need time to get it right. You need time to work it out. You can't change your squad radically and have it all gel together in the space of a year. And you look at any team that has success, there's always like 2 or 3 years of it sort of bubbling away and doing all right, but then all of a sudden it clicks together. And it comes through consistency. And that is the same for any job. You don't have to be the greatest all the time. You know, you don't have to be a genius or a mastermind all the time. You just have to be pretty consistent with what it is that you're doing, have the same message, have the same system, and have a reasonably stable group of people around you, both you know, your backroom staff and your players. And eventually they get it. If you're a decent coach, you guide them to the system that you want to play, and eventually it starts to work. And for example, well, you know, the only one I really know is, of course, being a Leeds fan, you can say that, because look at their squad. Marcelo Bielsa gets criticised for not having a plan B, right? But he sticks with plan A, every single week, all the way through training, all the way through every level of the club, from the you know, under 11s all the way to the first team. They play the same game. And lo and behold, consistency works in the end. Because everybody knows what everybody's supposed to be doing. And if you move from one job to the next, you've got the same gig again. And it just makes it a lot easier. And that consistency is a big thing. Go changing stuff, changing your backroom staff, changing players, changing managers. It's not going to give you a... You're just starting again. So you've got to build it all up again. And I think as well, Everton fans don't believe that they are a club that are capable of competing at the very top. I don't think they believe it. They've got the money. They've got an owner that can put the money in, get you a world-class manager like Ancelotti, but they just sort of don't seem to believe it. And they should believe it, because they've got the resources there and they're going to have a swanky new stadium very soon. And they can do it. I think, you know, accepting that mediocrity is maybe part of their problem. Did you know that there was four managers who left their job on the same day? By the way, on the 23rd of May, Conte left Inter, Nuno Santo left Wolves, Benitez left his team that I can't pronounce in China, Dalian
Yafan.
That's it. Yeah, that's the one. And Sam Allardyce, of course, left West Brom, which leaves that means that there's five jobs now going, and four managers there ready to do that merry-go-round. So who's going to end up where? I'm going Allardyce to Inter. Big surprise.
Roy Hodgson's out of a job as well. Santa, they love him in Inter.
Oh yeah,
they love him there.
Oh yeah, there's oh Ray, yeah, he's a legend.
Roy Hodgson's a flight risk. You can't be doing too many transatlantic flights in at 79 years of age or whatever.
That's
it is.
Roy Hodgson's life is going to be portrayed in a movie by that guy out of Snatch. You know the East End guy. Your son, I'm going to do you over.
Who, Jason Statham?
That's not him. That's the son of Roy. It's incredible. Yeah, he was a legend, isn't he, Roy, in various places, particularly in Milan. Brilliant. Who'd have thought?
What was I going to say then? You've put me off with that random Snatch reference there.
No, it just came
all
to
I can
me.
Think of all I can think of now is Brad Pitt going, "Do you like dags?"
You son, you want to get on a bench?
Are you thinking of Bricktop?
Yes, that's him. Bricktop.
Yeah, he's like the gangster who's older than
play
he's like
the
head.
It's called Bricktop. Yeah, that's the one.
Well, there you go. Anyone listening to this going, "What the hell are these three talking about?" Just Google Bricktop, and you'll see what I mean. And then also Google his quotes or watch some clips because he's a hilarious character. And I can't really repeat them without Niall using the bleep button about 13 times in this next coming minutes, but. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see where Carlo Ancelotti ends up in a year's time when Madrid get bored of him. But moving on to who's going to take over from Everton, because as Ian mentioned there, Niall, there's a lot of guys out of work. There's a big old queue at the Dole office right now. We think of Nuno Santo, Eddie Howe, Rafa Benitez. Big Sam returning. Who's best positioned for it in your opinion, do you think?
I think from what I've read, and my cousin's a big Everton fan, so he was pretty gutted about it yesterday. He thinks that Eddie Howe would be a good shout for Everton. I don't know whether that would be or not, but from what I've read as well, I think those at Everton, Marcel Brands is obviously the sporting director, and then there's Farhad Moshiri, who's the kind of owner of the club. I think they're quite keen on Eddie Howe as well. We've spoken as well on this podcast that Eddie Howe looks destined to go to Celtic. That's taken a long, long time to get over the line, so maybe he was just kind of biding his time.
If something
time.
Takes that long with him going to Celtic, that long, then no.
No,
you don't have to sell Celtic. If you're interested, you're interested. I think that's just dragging on, isn't it? Dead in the water, I think.
Yeah, which makes me think that maybe he could be a contender for some of these other jobs. Now, Nuno Espirito Santo, I think, is in talks with Crystal Palace, believe it or not, overtaking their manager's job. They've been in talks for 3 or 4 days with Nuno Espirito Santo. But now the Everton job's come up. Maybe that might be a more attractive prospect. It's really difficult because I think that now that Everton have had Carlo Ancelotti, I think that now that makes them a more attractive proposition to other managers. So that is an interesting thing. Maybe they can attract a higher caliber of manager just now purely because they have got or had Carlo Ancelotti. But Tottenham are a bigger club than Everton, and Tottenham have also got no manager. So I think that if you're talking about
Pochettino's apparently told PSG he wants to quit.
There we go. I mean, there's loads of moving and shaking going on this summer. It's crazy. But, you know, Tottenham need a manager as well. So I just wonder whether, is it going to be kind of a situation where Everton lose out on who they truly want because they end up going to Tottenham if they do truly want a world-class manager? Because Carlo Ancelotti is that. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, look at the players he's managed to attract to Everton. Players like Alan and James Rodriguez, who probably wouldn't have turned up to Goodison Park if it wasn't for the manager. They're under contract, obviously, so in terms of their futures, I suppose it would take a bid from another club to actually take them off of Everton's hands. But it feels like of what has been, you know, a project which has began to build, and obviously the new stadium on the horizon as well, it feels like a huge, huge piece of the puzzle has been pulled out now that Carlo Ancelotti has decided to leave. You can't really blame him because, as we said before, Real Madrid is a great club and it's an attractive club no matter what the situation they're in. But in terms of a replacement for Ancelotti, it's hard to tell. I mean, has Eddie Howe done enough at Bournemouth to convince Everton fans that he's the right man for the job? But then again, they did take a punt on Marco Silva, who got relegated twice. So who knows? I don't know, really, is the answer. It feels like a really difficult one for Everton to try and crack. And I've not really seen any suggestions from any Everton fans over who they truly want. So it's a bit of a tough one, that.
Do you think, Ian, thinking of Everton and big names and experienced managers in a similar style of profile to Carlo Ancelotti, do you think any of them would put the history aside to talk about Rafa Benitez as the new manager? Because all I'm thinking of is Benitez is desperate to work in England again. He said that openly. His kids are over here. He's based in Liverpool. I think his kids...
He's still got a gaff there, yeah. Isn't he, Marley? Still got a place.
Yeah, he has. So that all seems to fit. But could Everton sort of put the past in the past and take over the other side of Merseyside, do you think, Ian?
It would be controversial, wouldn't it? Because he's got a great sort of legacy, if you like, at Liverpool. And you wouldn't want to torch that unnecessarily. Clearly, it's a good job, and as you say, it would probably fit with his his lifestyle and where he's living, and he wouldn't be the only one to cross Stanley Park. There's been a few that have done it, and I'm just scrabbling around to try and get some names. So feel free to edit this bit. I've got some. Right. Some players that have played both sides of the park include, Peter Beardsley. I mean, surely you don't get anybody who's a bigger Liverpool legend than Peter Beardsley to also play for Everton. Steve McMahon did it. Sander Vestervelt's done it.
Abel Xavier.
Yeah, Razor Ruddock, I think, didn't he? Did he play for both, or am I making that up? It was certainly on Celebrity. It was certainly on Celebrity Big Brother. I know that much. So it wouldn't be the first. There are many people who have played for both sides. So why not manage them as well? It would be controversial in the eyes of some, but you could say that about anything. You know, what if you went to Man United, for example? What if you went to any other club that are a rival of Liverpool? Why is it such a massive deal to be manager of Everton after so long? It's not like he's ditched Liverpool to go to Everton. I think that would be more of a needle. But there's been a lot of water under the bridge since he was involved at Liverpool now. And why not? Why not if the conditions are right? I'm sure anybody who is a football fan will remember the greatness he brought to Liverpool in that time, and would like to see him do well. You know,
would the fans take him though? I mean, this is the thing. I mean, he'd take the job, I'm sure, because, like you say, it's one of those things where it's water under the bridge. He won them the Champions League, let's not forget. And they'll be a laughing stock, the Everton fans. They'll be getting they get dogs abuse anyway from their red neighbours, but they will get so much abuse. Oh, you've got our washed up dregs of a manager who's done nothing for the last X amount of years. Sorry, Marley, you did a good job in Newcastle, I know, but this is what the Liverpool fans would be saying. I just wonder whether the Everton fans would be up for getting that sort of stick.
Well, it depends if he then goes there and wins something or gets them into Europe or into the Champions League or whatever. Then that argument's cancelled out, isn't it? I suppose it depends how he does. But there's great resources. And you look down at the teams in the Premier League that are available to be managed at the moment. You're talking about Crystal Palace, for example. Surely Everton is streets ahead of being the manager of Crystal Palace. In the scheme of things, they're a team that have always been in the Premier League, never been relegated, never really fought it. They've been an ever-present, fantastic history, and why not be the man to make them great again? As I say, they've got this new stadium that's going to be on the way in a few years and all that, and it could be a good time to be getting in there and leading this new charge for the new Everton potentially. There will be always be question marks. But you could say that for any club. You know, if he went to any club, there'd be somebody to have a problem with it. There's always somebody that's moaning. That's life.
Very true. I can see it now. Rafa comes in and he brings a little blue cap and he has Make Everton Great Again on the peak of it. So I tell you what, can you imagine if you went to Everton and he was like, his first signing was Felipe Coutinho. just really tell you what, if you're going to go to Everton, double down on it and take their take Liverpool's former best player as well. So
and Torres.
Well, hey, apparently he's coming back to football, Fernando Torres.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, even though he's absolutely ripped now, you should see the bloody size of him. He looks like a former gladiator, like the world's prettiest gladiator. But yeah, we'll leave that there before this one becomes a Fernando Torres loving. Right, we'll wrap this up for this, the second part of today's Football Social Daily. We'll see where everyone ends up in the coming weeks. We'll be back on Friday for another podcast where we'll maybe have more on the managerial merry-go-round. There's still vacancies at Crystal Palace, Wolves, possibly PSG, Tottenham maybe on Friday. They might have appointed someone. Who bloody knows? I can't keep up with it anymore. But we'll leave that for there and we'll move on to part three. After the break, we'll be back talking about England again, talking about their game against Austria tonight in the one of the final European Championship warm-up games against Austria. So join us after this. Welcome back to the third and final part of Football Social Daily. It's Wednesday and we're looking forward to an England game tonight. I honestly didn't even know it was Wednesday today. I well thought it was Tuesday thanks to the bank holiday.
The season ended a week ago, Marley, and we're already talking about England games. It's been 7 days.
I know. I am proverbially on the beach and yeah, I completely forgot England were playing tonight. But they are. They're playing Austria in Middlesbrough, of all places. Middlesbrough. Yeah, so random one. But yeah, they should see some nice football for once, because Middlesbrough haven't had some decent stuff to watch for years. But yeah, Newcastle bias coming in there. England versus Austria. Don't forget, guys, as well, this is a Euros warm-up. But when the tournament starts on July the 11th, the first game for England is July the 13th. And if you fancy having a flutter on any England game during the Euros, our friends over at Boyle Sports are offering you a £10 no-lose bet on all games featuring the Three Lions. So basically, you can put your bet, a £10 bet on any market on the England game. And if it loses, your bet will be refunded via a free bet. So you'll have a £10 free bet sitting in your account if you do what I do and always back something that manages to lose. Find out more via the Boyle Sports app or visit boylesports.com. T's and C's apply. 18 plus, bet responsibly, and begambleaware.org. But looking forward to tonight, we've mentioned before, guys, that the seven have been cut from the squad. However, Southgate was then asked about Jesse Lingard and he said, well actually he's sticking around and he'll probably start tonight. So Ian, I know this is because the Champions League and Europa League players haven't quite joined up with the squad yet. However, does this all seem a bit pointless if we're not using the squad with what it is? You know, the 26 men aren't going to be all involved. So is this all a bit of a damp squib?
Well, I suppose when the fixture was put together, they didn't realise that two teams were going to get to the Champions League and Europa League finals. So I think that's probably the thing in to give them their due. the Man City the Man City and the Chelsea players are going to be late, and I think a few of the Man United ones maybe as well. So it will be interesting. From reading the articles in the press about this game, it seems that we can expect a bit of a hybrid team, really. The players that have had a bit of rest and haven't been involved in those games that are likely to be in that opening match against Croatia in the Euros possibly will be starting the match tonight, and then the gaps filled in by a few others who are willing and able, like Jesse Lingard, to take the other spots. And then it looks like we might get second half appearances from the likes of Henderson and Grealish and people like that, who are building up their fitness again. So I'm not sure we're going to learn a great deal from the squad selection tonight. But as I say, I think the system could be the bigger thing, because clearly that's something that they will have been working on. That is something that's going to be probably a constant regardless of who's playing, because we've seen that Gareth Southgate's picked quite versatile players to switch positions. So we'll be interesting to see what the lineup is, and also, but I think more importantly, that have a look at the system that's being played, because that will give you some clues as to where we're going to be come the reckoning, and when the tournament actually does begin, more than the lineup tonight.
Well, you mentioned the weird lineup, Niall. Do you think this will be a fully sort of experimental 11, or do you think he'll go as strong as he possibly can, and like Ian said, you know, fill in the blanks type of thing with players that aren't quite gonna make the trip to England, get on the train and go to London or whatever it is?
Well, firstly, Austria aren't that bad a side. They're 13th in the UEFA coefficient ranking, which is only one spot below the Netherlands and two below Croatia. And I know it's all a bit wishy-washy with how it's all done. For instance, Iceland are technically better than Croatia and the Netherlands, according to the rankings. But still,
what?
Austria will
Where
be a decent...
Where Iceland?
Iceland are 10th.
Oh, Jesus wept.
Yeah. So actually, they're a decent outfit, Austria. So let's not be fooled by the fact that England should beat them. And England should beat them, even with a second-string side. But I don't think it'll be as easy. It's always difficult before a tournament, isn't it? Especially a big tournament on home soil, like a portion of this Euro 2020 is. In terms of players and not getting them injured and stuff like that. So we know that, as we've discussed before, there are a handful of players that are injured at the moment that won't feature. I think Harry Maguire is said to be touch and go for the first game of the tournament, which is 11 days time from now, so he's not got a great deal of time to recover from that ankle injury. He was only in a boot a couple of weeks ago. So those players who are pretty much 50-50, I'm sure, won't be risked for this game. And that's the benefit of having those extra seven players that have been cut sticking around. Those players will be able to fill in the gaps. I don't think we'll see a super strong team tonight. I think we'll see a few faces who are fit enough to play, but also you have to consider the risk of injury. With just two warm-up games before the start of the tournament, the last thing you want is a player picking up a serious injury and missing the entire tournament. That would be an absolute disaster, particularly if someone as important as like Harry Kane, for example. We know how fragile he can be at times. So if he picks up an injury going into the Euros, everyone's going to be absolutely devastated, and that causes a serious problem for Gareth Southgate moving forward. So I do think that that is always going to be in the back of the manager's mind. I also think that, like what you said, Marley, what's the point of having these warm-up games if you aren't going to try and play the way that you're going to play in the tournament? Aren't you trying to play yourself into form? So it's a difficult one, really. And I don't envy Southgate. These are always horrible moments. I mean, to be honest, I think if I was a manager, I'd rather just go straight into the tournament and not have any warm-up games. Because I just think the warm-up games kind of gives you anxiety and you're worrying about whether your players are going to be injured or not. So, yeah, I mean, I think this will be a difficult game for England. I wouldn't be surprised if England don't win it. If there's a draw or something like that, I don't think they'll lose. But I wouldn't be surprised if Austria pull out a decent result, to be fair to them. They've got some good players. And, yeah, it's hard to know what sort of system or lineup Southgate's going to go with. But I'm sure he'll have the fact that with only a couple of games and 10 days until the tournament starts, the last thing you want is someone picking up even a small knock, because that 10 days will erode very quickly. And, you know, you don't want to deplete your chances of winning the opening game against Croatia.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Croatia next Sunday. We've got Romania this Sunday. We'll see what we end up doing. And I don't know who's going to end up playing those games, but we'll see if players can get fit and get involved. We'll see if, as well, when the Europa League and Champions League winning and contributing players will actually turn up. Because I thought, was it not worth, you know, pushing it back until you get some of them? With a 26-man squad, could you play with you know, half a squad on the Thursday or whatever, and then play the other 13 on the Sunday, for example? But the way it's worked out, we'll see what England do tonight. But if you do want to look at Austria and you're wondering what to expect from Austria, go to the podcast website, the Sports Social Podcast Network website that we've got. It's linked to the sportsocial.co.uk website. You can find it through there, because on Gavin Hamilton's Euros road trip, he looks at every single country competing in this summer's European Championships. And the Austria chat is with a journalist called Tom Midler, who looks at everything to do with what Austria will bring to the table. Let's talk about the players we know, like David Alaba and players like that. And there's also something on Marco Arnautovic, who's been in Holland. No, he's not been in Holland. He's been in China for the last few years, and whether that'll affect him and his sort of sharpness and his importance to the Austrian team. But maybe we'll see him tonight as well, and we can have a good look at Austria and see what they bring to the table in the Euros when they kick off. But as for England, we've sort of touched on this before, so we'll do it kind of quick. Niall, yes or no? Do we play a back three in the warm-ups and the tournament, or do we think we'll go back to a 4-3-3?
I think it'll be 4-3-3.
4-3-3. Ian, do you agree, or do you think we're going to mess about with a hybrid back three weird system and seven right-backs up the right-hand side?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a back three tonight. Maybe this is the experiment, if there is going to be one. But I can see it reverting back to the good old-fashioned 4-3-3. Not quite the 4-4-2 of Big Sam, but then again, Big Sam's not in charge, and probably for that reason. I think there might be an experiment tonight. But as we get closer, if they are going to mess about with stuff, it's going to be tonight.
I think Leeds play 4-3-3, don't they?
Leeds play four, yeah, kind of. Leeds
with Calvin Phillips.
Yeah,
deep,
it's a diamond sort of thing.
In the middle.
Yeah, Leeds play like 4-4-1, 4-1 or something.
Right.
Like
Liverpool play 4-3-3 with Henderson in the middle. And I'm just thinking, with the midfielders that England have chosen, the only team that doesn't is that plays three at the back is West Ham, with wing backs, and then Declan Rice is the only other midfielder. So, yeah, I think if Phillips starts, it's a 4-3-3. If Rice starts, it's a three at the back.
I'm just looking at the fixtures though for Euro 2020. I need the wall planner out of the newspaper. That's what I'm lacking, because I haven't really got that full sense of the
blue
magnitude.
Blue tack your pencil underneath it, Ian.
Yeah, the road to the final. Because if England do well in this, historically, you look back, either you've got to be a blinding team or it's got to be a home tournament to get a win.
The final's at Wembley, so it's such a big opportunity.
Well,
England's group games are as well.
Yeah, well, England's entire, apart from one match, England could go through this entire tournament playing at Wembley. So the group games are at Wembley. The next round, if they win their group, the Group D winner
is... It's quite far away, isn't it?
It's at Wembley.
One of the knockout games, isn't it, in Baku or something like that?
It depends where they finish. Right. If they're a runner-up, then yes, I think that is a possibility, or Bucharest or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
But if England win the group, then the furthest they're going to have to go is one match at the Olympic Stadium in Rome, and then beyond that, everything's going to be at Wembley. So there's only the one game. If they win the group, which is the big question, they could go through the entire tournament with only one away match. Obviously, you don't want to meet Italy at the Olympic Stadium in Rome.
No.
That wouldn't be great.
No.
But the rest were, you know, it's pretty much a home tie. So if they're going to do it, it's coming home. Get the Badil and Skinner CD wiped down. Away we go.
Marley's ordered 15 car flags off of Amazon.
I've mentioned this before, but I used to do a sports phoning with Emily Hughes, and of course, a former England captain. And it was the World Cup 2002 maybe, or the Euros in 2004. Anyway, he rocked up in his car, and honestly, his car was covered in these England flags when they were all the rage out of his window. And I'm just like, the amount of extra fuel he must have burnt dragging these flags down the M1 from Sheffield must have been incredible.
But, literally the worst right bit there of football merchandising of all time.
And the Vuvuzela.
Yeah. Oh, God. As long as we have another tournament without a Vuvuzela, we can't ask for any more. What I'm going to do is I'm going to tailor my sunburn. So I'm going to have white arms and a red body. So I'm going to have a red, big red cross on my body where I've just managed to get sunburnt. And that'll be me. I'll just be a walking, talking England flag for the next 3 weeks. But we'll leave it there. This has been Wednesday's Football Social Daily. Don't forget, we'll be back on Friday to look at whatever the hell's going on in the football world. We'll probably have 8 new managers, and England will have 3 players out with broken legs or something after the game tonight. but we'll see what's happening on Friday. That'll do us for Wednesday. Get out, enjoy the sun while it's here, because it's going away rapidly. It's going to be poured down for the entire Euros, I bet you. But yeah, thank you, Ian, and thank you, Niall, for joining me on today's podcast.
Cheers, Marley. Thanks, mate.
Cheers.
And we'll see you on Friday. Don't forget to check out us on sportsocial.co.uk. Also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, anything else you can think of that we haven't got, and get us on there as well. So yeah, join us again on Friday. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.